On this morning's Off the Ball Breakfast,
we had this.
One thing I'll say about Liam Cahill is that as a motivator, you're not going to get any better. When Liam delivers a speech in the dressing room before, no matter where you are, we were from Waterford and he had us ready to go. So I can only imagine what he's like managing his own before an All-Ireland final.
And we also had this.
How exciting would this be if we were playing South Africa?
Yeah.
The whole world would be watching going, this is incredible. Look at Razzie, look at what he's done. Listen to the shit he's saying. And we would actually be enjoying it all. This is all like, all right, see you in 12 years, lads.
You can catch everything from this morning's Off the Ball Breakfast elsewhere on the Go Loud app and every weekday morning from 7:30.
The News Run on Off the Ball.
With UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
This is News Talk.
Good evening and welcome along to Tuesday night's Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you until 10 o'clock this evening. And we're kicking things off at 7:30 with John McGrath on the line to reflect on another great All-Ireland final day for him. He is a man who loves the biggest stage. He proved that in 2016 with a 1-3 tally from play. He proved it again in 2019 with a 3-points tally from play. And he certainly proved it on Sunday with 2 goals and 2 points from play. His second goal, possibly the most iconic moment of the match and possibly his best performance in an All-Ireland final ever as well, despite it being a pretty high bar. So he'll be taking a break from the celebrations across Tipperary to join us for a quick conversation. After 8 o'clock, we're going to have Brian O'Driscoll with us to look ahead to the second Lions test. Then after 9 o'clock, Tommy Rooney will be on the line to begin our build-up to set the scene for All-Ireland football final weekend. He's got plenty of audio from the Kerry press night, from the Donegal press night as well, so we'll be hearing from the likes of Jack O'Connor and Jim McGuinness. Our number is 0879 180 180 if you want to drop us a WhatsApp. And Cameron Hill is back with us. Cameron, how are you doing?
Good evening, Owen. Did John McGrath race Shirley Mosley at 6 o'clock in the morning in Thurles as well today?
I will ask him that. Okay. And we will find out. We will find out the answer to that question. Mick McCarthy, how are you?
Hi. Who did?
It was a former Tipperary hurler.
Yes, a former Tipperary hurler.
His name escapes
who obviously
me.
Has
only
no
name,
chance.
Only known to me, anyways. Buggy.
Buggy. David Buggy.
Right, okay.
Is that his name? Apologies. 0879 180 180.
I did
to
put
any
you
of the bystanders
both on the spot there, but
there.
Yeah, fair play, Charlene. Yeah,
I mean, it's one of the all-time great middle of the night / early in the morning activities. It's just to go racing, just to go running up the road. And I'm glad that Charlene Mosley is on our level as well. That it is her literal job to do that.
Way above our level in terms of the result of the race, I would imagine.
I would suggest there was no jeopardy involved, despite the fact that she'd given up a 20-yard head start to this fella. But I'm glad that even the professionals like to engage in just a little bit of running. You got to let out a bit of energy sometimes if you've got all this sort of pent up this tip happiness, I guess, after last night in Thurles and the night before in Dublin.
It's the greatest viral video reveal I've seen in a while since Fenton, where you just see this lad running up the street and then Charlene Mosley in a blaze just completely outpacing him. It's so funny.
What was the Fenton thing?
You ever see
the
Fenton
dog.
Where he chases the dog and it's like, Fenton, Fenton.
Oh,
and then all you see is like a massive herd and then a dog.
Sorry, I thought you were talking about Brian Fenton for a second. I was like, what?
Well, that was because when Brian Fenton came on the scene, like not long after that video.
Yeah.
And there was an element of you couldn't go to Crow Park without just people just going, Fenton, Fenton. we've got off topic already.
No, not at all. We'll put that to John McGrath.
On John McGrath's whereabouts and stuff today, right? So obviously, like, maybe it's like certain people are taking it easier than others and so, but he's able to talk to us, which is great. I have often thought, maybe it's because we do this job and we, try and contact these people on the Tuesday and, we'll have reporters at the homecoming on the Monday. We always have people in, the hotel on the Monday morning and stuff like that. I've often, because of that weirdness, I've often thought about what All-Ireland week must be like after you win. And I always land on the Tuesday being the day. So you have the Sunday night, I'd say it's mainly adrenaline and you've got the banquet and everything like that and you have a few bits to do. I'd say Monday is just mad. Like, Monday's hard, I would imagine. I'd actually say it's borderline pain
in the
arse.
As well.
You're traveling, you've got a lot of commitments, you've got to do it. And then Tuesday, you would imagine it's like not too far off panel, maybe a few other people that are known to everybody. and not that much more. And I'd say you get to talk about the match a little bit, or, you know, and maybe it's not just that. Like, I mean, they have other things in their life that I'm sure they want to talk about and they're having a bit of crack, but I'd say it's the first time there's real reflection. I'd say the Tuesday would be just that sweet spot. It's probably Wednesday, you're
like,
tired.
It's probably not too far off the day two of a wedding, where it's just like, okay, now we can actually chill. We can probably have a conversation. There's not the frantic nature of what happened the day / night before. We can actually just maybe have a conversation and a catch up.
Yeah, the bride and groom get to have a much better time. So John McGrath gets to have a good time today. He is like, certainly.
It's about the players today, actually, is kind of what I've often thought. Yeah.
You say that they might have other topics of conversation. If I'm John McGrath, I'm sitting in the pub today watching my goals on loop.
Just, that's it. I wonder what they put the match on the TV, yeah.
I was actually walking past Ryan's on Camden Street Monday evening at about 10 o'clock, quarter past 10. And the match is being replayed again. I'd say that match has been on loop in Ryan's for 36 hours at this stage. I did brave it on Sunday night, actually. I forgot to neglect this. I forgot to mention this on the show yesterday, that I did brave. I dipped a toe into Ryan's on Sunday night because a couple of my mates were in there.
Yeah.
And It was something. It was the most compressed situation of joy I've ever seen in my life. And then whatever, 24 hours later, it was still the same feed on the television, let's say, and there were still a few Tipperary stragglers in there. Magnificent to see.
Yeah,
that,
I'm not sure for Joe Public if Tuesday is the best day. I think, you know, maybe if you do Monday, but Tuesday is when you start to think about your decisions in life.
Definitely, yeah. Definitely.
Day three of the wedding.
Yeah, day three of the wedding. Yeah, it's like, that's the honeymoon. Yeah, it's yeah, like, yeah. Why are you on the honeymoon?
Because you were at the wedding on Sunday. Yeah. The players, it was kind of yesterday. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, so that's coming up very shortly, 7:30 or thereabouts. We'll be joined by John McGrath to reflect on Sunday and the season as a whole. The Lions were playing this morning. We were chatting to Brian O'Driscoll around that time. He had a lunchtime flight to Melbourne, so we didn't get the full game watched before we were chatting. So it's mostly a preview of the second test. But we did manage to see this morning. I mean, good morning for Jamie Osborne. Is that the top line here, guys, when we think of the game? Or are we actually kind of reaching more towards the likes of Owen Farrell showing a bit of needle and that being the big storyline from this morning?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's probably the Osborne factor. It seems like going in at outside centre, then being pushed out to the wing when Darcy Graham limps off. And I suppose like the other narrative is, what does that mean for Gary Ringrose as a second test prospect? Because 65 minutes in the legs while you're preparing for a second test against the Wallabies mightn't be the best preparation. But Osborne was great. I thought he was really the classic piece that maybe Andy Farrell was missing in terms of implementing that Farrell-esque game plan. He was brilliant multiple times, just caught out on the wing with nobody marking him, and he probably should have had a hat-trick, to be honest. There was a moment in the second half where either the blitz play from the First Nations and Pacifica, or the FNP, as Sky Sports kept referring to it as, which sounds like a kind of low-level political party.
I did think that, yeah, of dubious intentions. Yeah.
But they kind of scrambled enough to maybe cut off that channel, but he was in the right place at the right time, running some really good lines. And yeah, you wouldn't put it like the third test, you could get the 23 jersey and be that utility back option. Other than that, it's a tough old day, especially the scrum. I think it's the first time that the scrum was really tested from a Lions perspective, and wasn't a very easy day at the office. Not helped in any way by Taniele Tupu having a great game and putting his hand up as potentially getting into the Wallabies test side as well.
Yeah, that was the takeaway that I took from it, was that maybe you're looking at more the other team as relevant. And I thought it was such a poor display from the Lions that I can't see anybody making, you know, even Osborne did well, but I think he's so far down the pecking order probably for, you know, a test position.
Now,
his versatility totally helps him. It must be so hard. But at the same time, for the likes of Van der Fleer, Morgan, Ringrose, obviously, who I think probably didn't want the 65 minutes, you said, but I don't think that would hold him back. I think there was an opportunity there for a few people. Like, there was an opportunity for Van der Merwe, I would say. I don't think James Lowe's or Tommy Freeman's position is in any way nailed down after the performance on Saturday. So you'd have to think that the biggest takeaway is that the test team are probably sitting pretty. yeah, watching that, because I don't think anybody really said, oh, you have to pick me. You think about those games when they're at their best, like in South Africa in 2009, I believe, after the Lions lost the first test, I think Shane Williams scored 5 tries in one of these games and was in the test team then and kind of like was a huge part of the rest of the series. Nothing like that happened this morning, obviously.
No, I think if you're Ollie Chasam, you're feeling pretty good about if Joe McCarthy can't make it through, he's the next guy up, because I don't know if James Ryan did his cause any favours today, particularly that yellow card, which was quite needless.
We're going to have more on this in the news round in just a moment. But just to bring you some breaking news, which I think might have just broken just after the last news bulletin, Ozzy Osbourne has died at the age of 76. Oh. So a statement from his family has said, "It is with more sadness than mere words can convey that we have to report that our beloved Ozzy Osbourne has passed away this morning. He was with his family and surrounded by love. We ask everyone to respect our family privacy at this time. Sharon, Jack, Kelly, Amy and Lewis." He'd been diagnosed with Parkinson's in 2019. So that's just coming out at the moment. He was born on the 3rd of December 1948 in Birmingham. And there's plenty more to come on that, I'd imagine, as the night goes on. Tom Dunne will be up after 10 o'clock tonight
he
as well.
He just played Villa Park like 2 weeks ago.
Did he really? Yeah,
it was a big kind of homecoming gig. It was,
well, Black Sabbath did, obviously, like, but yeah.
Yeah, that's... So that is the news this evening. Ozzy Osbourne dead at the age of 76.
It was a farewell concert. It was supposed to be his kind of retirement.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's just like, wow. Well, I think it was like maybe 3 weeks ago, so definitely July.
It will be largely sports news in the news round this evening, I take it. Cameron, you are starting tonight with the Tour de France.
Yeah, if you missed this, it was a fantastic finish and Ben Healy narrowly missing out on a second ever stage victory at the Tour de France this afternoon. The Irish cyclist was edged out by France's Valentin Paré-Pantre in a sprint finish up to the famous Mont Ventoux in today's stage 16. He did gain 43 seconds on yellow jersey holder Tadej Pogačar, however, and he moves up to ninth in general classification. But it was a really... really exciting finish at the end. I think everybody in the office was glued and thought that they were glued to the screen and thought that Ben Healy had really timed his run especially well. But Paré-Pantre, who I think has won a couple of stages himself in the past, just had it, and it was great. It was really, really good.
Mont Ventoux, probably the most iconic of all the climbs as well, certainly in the top two or three in the Tour de France, to see an Irish rider win on Ventoux. I presume Roach would have had some pretty good results there, but to actually have a somewhat finish on Ventoux is actually not always something you get every single year in the Tour de France, so I'm not sure if he actually has one.
I think Roach might have a famous one, but I could be wrong. You get some of those mountains confused a little bit, but
got a few in France.
I, as you said, like, to have a winner would be amazing. I'm happy enough to have a rider in contention at this stage, you know. It's been so long since we've had someone of this stature in GC anyway, you know. So God, he keeps doing it, doesn't he? Like, you got back into the top 10 yesterday when you kind of thought that things were kind of fading away a little bit, and then to have that ride today is unbelievable.
Yeah, for sure. You're moving on to the football next.
Yeah, Shelburne boss Joey O'Brien has confirmed that Conor Kearns is out of action for tomorrow's Champions League qualifier against Karabakh. The first choice goalkeeper is nursing a hamstring issue picked up in last week's first round win over Linfield at Windsor Park. So a win for Shells over the two legs against Azerbaijani Shahid will secure league phase football in next season's competition, and it's FCSB of Romania or Shkendia of Macedonia awaiting Shells in the next round. O'Brien says he wants attacking football from his players tomorrow in the first leg at Telka Park.
It's a great atmosphere, it's going to be here. Like I said to the lads earlier on, it's like any game here, we're going to attack it, try to get on the front foot. Obviously now they're going to be a quality team, have some serious players, but listen, at home, the way we want to be as a player, the way I want my team to play, it's attack, get on the front foot, show our personality and show our quality. A lot of natives, I suppose, from the finances and stuff like that. Like, but from our point of view, and for the lads' point of view, it's a great opportunity again to win a Champions League game, to have that in your CV as a player, to go into the next round and play against the opposition we're playing tomorrow night again. It only comes about because we won the first game. So it's not a great opportunity for the lads. And I suppose we win that last leg, it opens up, gives us a possibility to open up other doors.
There is an FAI Cup draw as well.
4 all Premier Division ties in the third round of the FAI Cup after today's draw, including a repeat of last year's final. So holders Drogheda are away to Derry City, while there's a Munster derby clash between Cork City and Waterford at Turner's Cross on the cards. St Pat's will welcome Shells, while Bows are set to host Sligo Rovers in the other 2 all Premier Division ties. Longford Town face a tough trip to record cup winners Shamrock Rovers, and it's a Galway derby with Galway United taking on Salt Hill Devon. Another Munster derby sees Kerry at home to Cove, while Bray Wanderers are away to Finn Harps. All of those games will be played on the third weekend of August, so ending August 17th.
The semi-finals of the Euros are upon us.
Yes, England continue the defence of their Women's European Championship title tonight. They face Italy in the first semi-final in Geneva. That game has been overshadowed by defender Jess Carter having come off social media after being targeted by racist abuse online during the tournament. Midfielder Georgia Stanway says online trolls do not reflect the vast majority of England supporters.
To us, the people that are being abusive and saying these things and doing things like this, they're not fans. So it makes absolutely no difference to us putting that shirt on, because we know that we're wearing it for the people that we stand next to, our families, the actual fans that are here to watch the game, to enjoy the game. And yeah, I say it with power because I really believe it. I believe that people like that aren't deserved to be called fans.
Yeah, so we were obviously watching this penalty shootout last week, England versus Sweden, previous night Italy doing Italian things. Kind of surprising, certainly when we were chatting to Ciara Grant on the night as this was happening, she was quite surprised that Norway were dumped out by this Italian side, and she was kind of making the point that it's so weird how you can have this national footballing culture which permeates through both the men's team and the women's team, yeah. Where it's like, you know, never write off the Italians, or an Italian side comes along to a tournament unheralded and then they knock off a team who are favoured in a knockout game, and here they are in the semi-finals.
Again, another game, Norway-Italy, with terrible penalties because Hegerberg misses it to kind of bring them back into it for Norway. I think last week's was the worst shootout I've seen since, remember Germany-Italy when Simone Zaza does that kind of tippy-top of a step up to the ball and just blazes it over the bar? And I think it's Euro 2016, that game. Emma Carroll will tell you outside that it's been a tournament of pretty shocking penalties.
Zaza, I would have never thought of that again. I remember exactly where I was. I remember him coming on and thinking, this lad's been brought on to miss a penalty. He came on really late in the game. And it was so obvious. But yeah,
It was the run-up.
It was the role. It was the heading him even when he was the being brought on. Yeah, in general. But like last week, we were down in Cork, obviously for the show, and we managed to watch. We watched extra time, and like talk about just being absolutely mesmerised by a penalty shootout, because it just kept getting worse and worse and worse and worse. I don't think it was reflective of like what was actually a great game. You know, so maybe it's a pity that maybe that will be the defining legacy of what we remember about the Euros, unless a lot happens from here on in. You know?
Or listen, even worse penalty shootout breaks out tonight. Well, I think England will be very happy if the game doesn't go to penalties. I think, yeah, if it does go to pens, they surely can survive again after
Terry Butcher in goal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they did have Terry Butcher on I think it was a TalkSport or something the next morning.
Of course it was, yeah.
You know, just a little bit of a throwback last week.
Does he just get dragged out anytime?
Every time someone bleeds.
We do have news on Crystal Palace as well, Cameron.
Yeah, the Court of Arbitration for Sport confirming today that Crystal Palace have appealed against their demotion from the Europa League. A decision on whether the FA Cup holders will be readmitted is expected on the 11th of August. Palace have been blocked from appearing in European football's second-tier competition due to multi-club ownership rules. They have been demoted to the Conference League. Last month, Drogheda United had their appeal dismissed by CAS over a similar UEFA decision to expel them from this season's Conference League, so we'll have to wait and see on that one.
Now your story on the lines.
Yeah, they struggled to a 24-19 victory against the First Nations in Pacifica 15 in Melbourne earlier. Ireland international Jamie Osborne scoring 2 tries on debut, while Leinster teammate Thomas Clarkson made his debut from the bench. Darcy Graham and Duane van der Merwe got the other tries, Graham going off injured shortly after scoring his. Head coach Andy Farrell was tight-lipped on whether anyone today had put their hands up for selection for the second test against the Wallabies on Saturday. He was speaking to Sky Sports.
There were some great performances by some individuals. I thought Ben White was very good Jamie, obviously, and some lads coming in playing the first game for us as well, so delighted for all of them. There's always food for thought. We do what we always do, we review this game and have a meeting tomorrow and select the side tomorrow evening.
Yep, that is Andy Farrell speaking today at after the game. Involving the British and Irish Lions. So what are you saying? We're writing this off as completely irrelevant or?
The tour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, sorry, not the tour. Today's game, are we like actually taking anything as we move on to Saturday?
So it's and the tour, yeah. Oh, it was so underwhelming, wasn't it? The game today was great. I thought it was the best game so far in that it was really on a knife edge. I think it's the first time they've been level apart from at the first whistle. It was 14 all at one point, and if Kurtley Beale got that kick after the third try, there was 3 points in it in the final 5 minutes. That would have been a brilliant finale, but
Where do we stand on wanting Australia to win on Saturday?
I don't. This 100% want Australia.
Yeah,
to win, yeah.
Like this. Mm. I was going to say, like this isn't the sort of like, you know, don't support the Lions because there's English players on it or whatever, like nonsense talk. It's like this is just like grand. Ultimately, you want probably like the Irish players to do very, very well and the Lions to ultimately win, but I think even for the future of the Lions existing.
Oh, yeah. I think rugby wants
you Australia need Australia to do something, don't you?
100%. But like it's certainly
they're
important.
They're also massive underdogs, if you want to look at it that way from a sporting point of view.
It's important from the context of the Lions existing in Australia. I mean, it was quite fitting that Argentina beat the Lions in the Lions' own backyard at the beginning of this tour. And with the Aussies at home, they might get beaten 3-0. Do you go back to a place where it's New Zealand, South Africa? I'm not sure Argentina would be able to force their way into the traditionalist
having
view
the
of
stomach for South Africa every 8 years.
Well, it would be better than Australia every 12 years on current evidence.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's been floated, but what about the idea of like Lions versus rest of world 15 every 12 years? So you do New Zealand 1 year, South Africa 4 years later, and then 4 years later, it's everybody except for New Zealand and South Africa. So it's Australia plus Argentina
and
plus
France.
Plus Fiji. Maybe France is the other option.
They just tour France.
But that's what they're discussing. I think there's meant to be a summit ahead of this weekend's second test in Melbourne. And Abdel Benazi, who's the current Six Nations Council president, is going to make the case for a tour going to France and maybe more warm-up games ahead of the 2029 tour. Like, but those are the options on the table now. We were having this conversation on Saturday, I think, myself and my brothers, and just the idea of like, if Australia goes, it's a really bad sign for rugby as a tour destination, and if the game continues on its downward trajectory there, like it just points out how rugby really is the one major world sport that geographically doesn't make any sense, because it's like a corner of Northwestern Europe that plays it, and then 3 to 4 huge markets in the Southern Hemisphere that are nowhere near close to each other. New Zealand and Australia are close when you look in the globe, but like in terms of the market and the actual distance, they're not neighbours really. And it's very, very hard for rugby to sustain that if one of the big markets and one of the traditional powerhouses has fallen so far behind. That if Lions, like I think Brian O'Driscoll said today, that they should have put 40 points on them in the first half in Brisbane the other day. And if the Lions beat Australia out the gate in the next two tests, and you've a World Cup going there, and that's meant to be your centrepiece, and the hosts are nowhere near performing towards the top level of the sport, that's not good. Like there was a game last Saturday where the two best teams were playing in the world, and it was in Hamilton when New Zealand were taking on France, and a third choice France team at that. That's not good.
But do you not... There's another side
South
of that.
African listeners, we do apologise for Cameron
and Georgia listeners, sorry.
Yeah.
There's another side of that though, which is, right, they've got the Lions Tour and they've got the World Cup. Maybe you just don't give up on Australia, you know, and that you try and keep them because market-wise, fans... Like, there's other ways of looking at this Lions Tour. Like, there's been brilliant full stadiums. People love going there as a trip. There's also a lot of British and Irish people already there. It's a wonderful destination. I think the World Cup is going to be incredible there in 2 years. Maybe you don't just give up on Australia and let them off as a, you know, as a former rugby stronghold. You know, I know it doesn't have the football, and it's really difficult. It's really difficult with AFL and Rugby League being so strong there. Soccer is growing all the time. Like, I mean, I was there 20 years ago hearing about how soccer was taking over, and it's gone massive since then. But I don't know. I think there's just something where I think World Rugby actually needs to make it a priority to keep Australia as a top tier nation.
There's no team in Melbourne. There's no rugby union team in Melbourne. Which
yeah, but
is
Melbourne
like
has never had any interest in rugby
but
union.
But it's the sports capital of the country.
Grand, but it's not part of their tradition. It'd be like saying there's no hurling team in wherever, like, you know, Mayo. I don't know. There's no equivalent. Belfast, say, for, like, you know, yeah. Obviously there is hurling there, but it is the equivalent. It's just not rugby, even league, is not part of the tradition of Melbourne. Melbourne is AFL and cricket, right? And then it's Sydney and Brisbane and the surrounding areas that are rugby, both codes, you know. So that's never going to change. You can't change that. Like,
it's not the Lions' problem, you know, about giving up on Australia or not. That's kind of Australia's own problem, and maybe a question for World Rugby to try and ensure that we have a strong Australia.
Sure,
for British and Irish.
Four of the main people who, you know, like the Lions is, you know, like Northern Hemisphere rugby needs to make sure that the game is wide and so on. I know the Lions is its own entity, but it's run by the unions.
I don't think you can afford to have a 4-year cycle where it's running into an absolute non-entity of rugby nation. Because it's tempting to say, God, it's so long ago since Australia were a powerhouse. This has happened relatively quickly in terms of the cream of the crop in Australia. Like, they were in a World Cup final 10 years ago.
Mm. Yeah.
And if you take it from that base, this is not a base of like 99 or 2003. This is a base of 2015, where they've spiraled since that point. Joe Schmidt is not going to be head coach next year. Les Kiss is going to be head coach. I mean, fine coach, but not exactly an inspiring choice to take them onto the next World Cup. I hope I'm completely wrong about that. But I think it's been downgraded. There is a downgrade coming after Joe Schmidt, and I don't know, I think they're between two stools at the moment. The players are showing up for a head coach who they know is not going to be selecting them for the big show in 2 years' time.
But what's the rush in making a decision on the Lions thing? Can they not go to South Africa in 8 years' time and maybe try to have a decision made by then and see what happens with Australia over the next decade? Because, again, that's going to be the key point anyway. I think in 8 years' time, when the Lions are in South Africa, we're going to know one way or the other about Australia.
Yeah.
If they keep sliding at the way they are at the moment, then it's not going to be even a question. You obviously can't have a 4-year build-up to a tour of, you know, a second-tier nation. But, you know, there's definitely time to save things.
We'll finish up with a couple of more stories here, Cameron. You've got some golf, some Gaelic Games.
Yeah, the 2031 Ryder Cup will be held at Camaral Resort in Girona, Spain. It'll be just the second time that the tournament is played in Spain. The last Spanish Ryder Cup was at Valderrama in 1997 when Seve Ballesteros led Europe to a famous win. Gavin Devlin is expected to be ratified as the new manager of the Louth Senior Footballers this evening. The county board have called a special committee meeting for tonight where delegates are set to vote on the replacement for Ger Brennan. Devlin had spent 3 seasons with the Wee County as assistant coach under Mickey Hart, but left along with Hart in 2023 to take up a similar role with the Derry Footballers. And just one score from the cricket tonight, the second T20I international series match again between Ireland and Zimbabwe. And Ireland have won that, so they've secured a 2-0 series win this evening in Pembroke Cricket Club, winning by 65 runs.
A text in here from someone saying, let's face it, the best day is always when the hangers-on are gone. Tuesday, by the way, it'll break up tomorrow into smaller groups and they'll never all be together like this again. Tuesday is the magic sweet spot. I didn't know if that texter was talking about Tipperary or the British and Irish Lions, but I think it makes sense for both of them. And someone else says, would you cop on? The Aussies are good at everything, even good looking. Let's just bait them. Which I think is a fair comment, you know.
Don't feel too sorry for Australia.
No.
Yeah,
not in general. Cameron, thank you for that. Mick, you're going to be back with us alongside Tommy Rooney from 9 p.m. as we provide the menu, let's say, for All Ireland football final week Sunday, Kerry versus Donegal. We'll take a quick break now, but after this, we'll be turning back to Sunday afternoon, just gone, for the All Ireland hurling final and reaction from the great John McGrath.